Third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 6, entitled The Creation of the Universal Form, text 38. Is it correct on the board? 38. So please kindly repeat responsively. Atmano Vashito Vatsa.
Atmano Vashito Vatsa.
Mahima Kavina Dina. Samvatsara Sahasrante. Diya Yoga Vipak. Sorry. Diya Yoga Vipakaya.
Diya Yoga Vipakaya.
Translation. Atmana. Of the Supreme Soul. Avasita. Known. Vatsa, O my dear son, Mahima, glories, Kavina, by the poet Brahma, Adina, original, Samvatsara, celestial years, Sahasrante, at the end of 1,000. Diya, by intelligence. Yoga Vipakkaya, by matured meditation. That's where the word pakka comes. Matured meditation. Translation. And purport by His Divine Grace, His Confounder Acharya, by Charanaraminda Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. O my son, the original poet, Brahma, after mature meditation for 1,000 celestial years, could know only that the glories of the Supreme Soul are inconceivable. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. There are some froggish philosophers who want to know the Supreme Soul by means of philosophy and mental speculation. And when the devotees who are to some extent in knowledge of the Supreme Lord admit that the glories of the Lord are inestimable or inconceivable, the froggish philosophers adversely criticize them. These philosophers, like the frog in the well who tried to estimate the measurement of the Pacific Ocean, like to take trouble over fruitless mental speculation instead of taking instructions from devotees, like the original poet, namely Brahma. Lord Brahma underwent a severe type of meditation for 1,000 celestial years. Yet he said that the glories of the Lord are inconceivable. Therefore, what can the froggish philosophers hope to gain from their mental speculations? It is said that in the Brahma Samhita that mental speculator may fly through the sky of speculation with the velocity of the mind or the wind for thousands of millions of years, and still he will find it inconceivable. The devotees, however, do not waste time in such vain searching after knowledge of the Supreme, but they submissively hear the glories of the Lord from bona fide devotees. Thus they transcendentally enjoy the process of hearing and chanting. The Lord approves of the devotional activities of the devotees or Mahatmas. And he says, Mahatmanas tumam partha, daivim prakritim mashritam, bhajanti ananya manaso gyatva Bhutadim avyayam satatam kirtayanto mam yatantas chadridavrataha namasyantas chamam bhaktya nitya yukta upasyate. The pure devotees of the Lord take shelter of the Paraprakriti, the internal potency of the Lord, called Lakshmi Devi, Sita Devi, Srimati Radharani, or Srimati Rukmini Devi. And thus they become actual Mahatmas, or great souls. Mahatmas are not fond of indulging in mental speculations, but they actually take to the devotional service of the Lord without the slightest deviation. Devotional service is manifested by the primary process of hearing and chanting about the activities of the Lord. This transcendental method practiced by the Mahatmas gives them sufficient knowledge of the Lord, because if the Lord can at all be known to some extent, it is only through the means of devotional service and no other way. One may go on speculating and waste the valuable time of his human life, but that will not help anyone to enter into the precincts of the Lord. The Mahatmas, however, are not concerned with knowing the Lord by mental speculation, because they enjoy hearing about his glorious activities in his transcendental dealings with his devotees or with the demons. The devotees take pleasure in both and are happy in this life and the life after. Om Hagena Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Heda Tasmei Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manavistam Snapitam Ena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadam Mahyam Dadati Svapadantikam He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Devacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhara Srivasavi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So here Maitreya is speaking to Vidura and he is addressing him as my son. This is the genuine relationship of guru and disciple. The spiritual master sees the disciple as a son or daughter. And here we are seeing how he is telling Vidura that even the original poet, Brahma, after mature meditation, yoga vipakkaya, for 1,000 celestial years, could know only that the glories of the Supreme Lord are inconceivable. So here in the purport, Prabhupada tackles the speculative philosophers, which can be of three kinds: materialistic philosophers, impersonalist Mayavadis, and Voidists, our favorite friends. We always have some boxing match with them, you know. So, the devotees, they receive knowledge through revelation, Shabda Brahman, because the devotees are humble. The devotees understand that if there is a God, that God must be too great for my brain to understand. So unless he reveals himself to me, how can I know that God? So therefore, knowing our inability, incapacity, you know, or capacity, insignificant capacity, then Krishna comes in various ways. He comes as an avatar, Shakti Avesh avatar, Lila avatar, or Yuga avatar. He descends down to disseminate what we cannot understand, to give us knowledge that is beyond our perception. And he also appears in the form of Shabda Brahman, such as the instructions given in the Bhagavatam or Srimad Bhagavad Gita. He also descends as the deity form of the Lord, Archa Vigraha. He descends as the holy name also. He descends in all these varieties of ways to interact with the living entity. So one who has purity, then such a person is open-minded. You see, open-minded. One who has no purity, he's closed-minded. Open-minded person is ready to hear anything, evaluate it and decide whether that may be true or not. And closed-minded person, no, there is no God.
I know.
So, they can criticize the devotees for being sentimentalist. Like a few days ago, one demon was telling me that he wrote, one lady posted something on Facebook and this demon started to attack the devotees there by philosophical arguments. And he was saying that the religious people, you are like small child who is talking to an unknown friend, unseen friend. It's like you're just imagining someone. So I told him, my dear sir, show me evidence of evolution. He posted some kind of fossil record speculation. And I told him this is just a complete concoction, mental speculation. So what is the proof that this was what you think it is? And then you've got one or two or three examples. But if you understand what evolution is, the theory of evolution is one simple entity, unicellular entity, has to come to multicellular entity, and in the transitional period there has to be thousands and thousands and thousands of morphological changes or different bodies that predated the modern anatomical being. So where are these forms? You've got two or three something and it's complete speculation. So it looks like you're believing in some unseen friend in the form of evolution, because you cannot show any evidence. So he said, can you show me anything better than logic and argument? So I said to him, what is your qualification to see anything more than that? I said to him, logic is a bridge to show you what you cannot see, or to help you to come on that bridge so that you can see what I see. He said, no, I want to see. Just like Hiranyakashipu, where is your God? He was like that, you know, I want to see something, you know. So I was telling him, my dear sir, you're completely unqualified to see. And I told him, just like if you go into one movie hall, and if the movie starts to be projected on the wall, but the lights are on, will you see anything? No, you never see anything. You just see some vague movements there on the screen. You cannot see until they switch off the lights, and then you can actually see the film. So I told him, your speculations are just like that. They're like some false lights that are throwing some, you know, falsity in your face, in your eyes, and you cannot really see what is going on, but because of these false illusions that you have, it illuminates the screen of reality and you cannot see it. You know, yeah, logic, yeah, arguments. You cannot show me anything better than that. He continues like that too. So I realized this guy is so foolish. And I just told him, you know, you're a very intelligent man. I am much more foolish than you. So, you know, you have a happy journey, you know. I said to him like that. Because I saw there is no purpose of arguing with such a fool, you know. Like he sent one picture, and on the picture there was a napkin, restaurant napkin, and on the napkin was written, there is God because I say so. So he said, so he's joking with us, you know. So he said, this is your scripture. Someone wrote it and you got no evidence. There is God because I say so. So the scripture is saying so, and then we are fools and yeah, we believe. So the answer to this is, okay, someone wrote something, but who is that person? Who wrote it? You know. So you have to examine who wrote that restaurant napkin. You know. And then if that person is an idiot, then you don't have to believe him. But if that person is some amazing scholar, intellectual person, then why should you not believe? Why should you not accept? See how foolish they are. They got no logic. It's completely stupid people, you know. But because Kali Yuga is at its best, you know, these kind of personalities are easily promoted to higher posts, academic posts, and they dominate the social worldview by their presentations. Therefore, Prabhupada wanted to flood the world with Krishna conscious literature and flood the world with temples and devotees that could counteract the assault of the age of Kali. It's an assault on the soul. So materialism is really the most inconsistent philosophy. I mean, they're all inconsistent, all these friends that I mentioned. Materialism, personalism, and voidism. It's completely inconsistent. There is no evidence. Richard Dawkins brags around. Science is about evidence. And religion is about sentiment. So when you ask him, where is your evidence? You know, he starts to, you know, get agitated. He may give some kind of speculation as evidence, but if you examine it carefully, you see that he's just speculating. So Prabhupada is saying these people have froggish mentality. You know, they try to understand what is beyond their reach through their limited mental speculation. So why are we so sure that we have it? We have the truth. Because Shabda Brahman is the foundational epistemological tool for acquiring truth, but it is in line with logic and sense perception. If the sense perception and logic support the Shabda Brahman, then automatically we can understand Shabda Brahman is correct. Even if we cannot see really what it leads to, you know, even if we cannot see Krishna directly, because it's logic and you can verify what it says through sense perception, you can assume that it is true, and then you can apply yourself to the process of bhakti, as Prabhupada points in the purport, which will lead you to the vigyan, to the realization of that. For example, Prabhupada said, there is no nothing created that we know in our experience, complex creation. You can never find that it just appeared. There must be a designer behind it. So Shabda Brahman is saying there is God. And then Pratyaksha, sense perception, is showing here is this vehicle, Ford. It's designed, it's very complex. It cannot just fall from the sky. You know, I never saw that some Fords are raining, you know, the cars, sometimes raining and some cars are raining. And then they just appear from the sky. No, there is a design. So we know, we see that every created object, complex object, that has a specific purpose, has a designer behind it. And then, this is pratyaksha, we can actually see it, observe it in our reality. And then, anuman is to say that, okay, if this is the case, because it's something visible, then it is easy to conclude that this complicated world, phenomenal world, our bodies and the world and the dynamics that are going on in the universe, it's easily to, we can easily go to the conclusion that there is a phenomenal designer behind. So this is how you use Anuman. You look at Pratyaksha and then Anuman, and then you say, yes, it makes sense. So let me take the Japa Mala and let me begin to chant. And then I'll see, maybe Krishna is there. You know, like that. So so bhakti, bhakti, bhakti science begins with humility. Maybe there is this great God about whom the scriptures speak. So you have to be humble to begin the process. And bhakti ends with humility. Because when you practice, one day Krishna will appear in front of you and then you'll become, oh my Lord, you know. And then you'll fall down. Full dandavats in total humility. You know. So it begins with humility and it ends with humility. Of course, the beginning humility is little and the end humility is total. But it's still humility. But the materialistic science, it begins with pride and ends with pride. Just think about it. It begins with pride. There is no God. You know, like they say. They're proud, you know. There is nobody higher than me. Why do you say there is someone very great person, you know? This is your childish imagination, you know, that's how they'll say. It's pride. He's beginning his research process based on pride. There is no God. So he begins to research. And then, because Krishna wants him to be bewildered, he will give him so many reasons which will convince him, yes, there is no God. And then he will become proud again at the end. Yes, I did the research and I saw this looks like evolution. Yes. You know, that means God doesn't exist. You know, so it begins with pride and it ends with pride.
Pride and arrogance.
Yes, arrogance. So Prabhupada is saying that the Vaishnavas are not speculators. But certainly we are philosophers. We are not fools. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when Prakasananda Sarasvati saw him and his disciples, they said, who is this rascal, you know, chanting and dancing? Sentimentally, he should be studying the Dhamma Sutra. What is this sentimentalism, you know? What is this? He's so young and he's taken sannyas, he'll fall down, you know. He's just enjoying his senses, dancing and chanting the name of Krishna. What is this? He'll fall down. He should study the Dhamma Sutra and get his intelligence fixed in Brahman, you know. He was thinking like that. But actually, when Mahaprabhu went to that meeting, the Mayavadis invited him to save him. They arranged the meeting. Actually, because they were insulting him, the devotees said, Mahaprabhu, you rather do something because these people are insulting you. So Mahaprabhu agreed to go to a place of gathering where they would gather their ashram. And he spoke to Prakasananda Sarasvati and Prakasananda Sarasvati was actually defeated by logic and argument. Krishna and Lord Chaitanya convinced him about Krishna, and Prakasananda Sarasvati, this dry Mayavadi sannyasi, dry because there is no relationship, no rasa, no flavor, is just undifferentiated oneness, you know. So very dry and miserable, just oneness. So this dry philosopher was chanting and dancing. There is a picture in Chaitanya Charitamrita. All the Mayavadis in ecstasy, and Mahaprabhu is amidst them. You've seen that picture. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, another example, great scholar. He gave 9 explanations of the Atmaram verse. Lord Chaitanya heard him for 7 days. 7 days. He didn't say a word. He was just listening to him. And then Sarvabhauma said, my dear sir, I've spoken for 7 days already and you never gave me any indication whether you understood what I'm saying. What do you think? And Mahaprabhu said, I heard, but I don't understand anything.
Your explanations.
Yeah, I do not understand your explanations. Yeah. So then he said, okay, if you do not understand, then you should explain to me. And then Mahaprabhu gave him 64 other explanations of the Atmaram verse without touching the 9 explanations of Sarvabhauma. And Sarvabhauma was bewildered. And he thought, this can only be the Supreme Person. And then Mahaprabhu showed him his form as Krishna, and Sarvabhauma fell on the ground in total ecstasy, crying tears of in ecstasy and also feeling pity for insulting the Lord. Some people have these theories that God is too big to come to this world. If there is a God, he cannot come in this world. He's too big. How can the unlimited come into this limited environment? But they don't understand. Shastra is clear on that. That Krishna, the Supreme Being, is Vibhu and simultaneously Anu. He is the biggest. He is unlimited. Biggest means unlimited. It's not that the unlimitedness is bigger than him. Some people think like that. Yeah, you believe in some God and he is limited, and the unlimited Brahman is everything. And no, the unlimited Brahman is an aspect of Krishna. Brahmana hi pratista is emanating from Krishna. So, you know, that is a materialistic concept that God is too big to come. So, of course, he's unlimited. He's not even big, he's unlimited. But then, within that unlimitedness, he can come into this limited world and maintain his unlimitedness, but at the same time interact with us in a way that we would appreciate the message he's carrying. So Krishna comes as his devotee, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he looks like an ordinary person. In fact, to this day, the academics are thinking, Maharaj was saying yesterday, that Mahaprabhu was a great saint, you know, some scholar or some great saint. And some of them even say that he had epilepsy. Because he was fainting in love of Krishna, you know, and rolling on the ground, and they couldn't understand, what is this? So they were thinking, he's got epilepsy. This is the material perception, you know. So, we understand that the source of everything is a person. He's unlimited. He cannot be put into a box. Even if the box is millions of light years big. Millions of light years big box, you know, like that. And that is God, you know. Millions of light years. He expands to that and then it stops. Then there is space. No. Krishna is unlimited. In fact, there is nothing outside of Krishna. Space is within him. Space, time, infinity, Brahman, everything is within him. And Krishna means the all-attractive person. So for someone to be the all-attractive person, he must be the 6 opulences, most beautiful, most powerful, wealthy, famous, etc. Wise, intelligent. But also, he must be unlimited. You know, this is one of the characteristics of the all-attractive person. He has this aspect of being omnipresent. That's why he came out of the pillar when the demon Hiranyakashipu said, "Where is your God? How can you show me Prahlad? You're such a foolish boy. You're worshipping some imaginary friend." And then Krishna appeared as Nrisimhadev from the pillar. I was looking this morning, this pillar is broken. I wonder what happened there. You saw there is a big hole in the pillar. Maybe the Lord appeared and did some lila and left. So Krishna is everywhere. how do we understand that Krishna is everywhere? Simply by the process of bhakti. Bhakti mam abhijanati avam yashta smitatvataha tato mam tatvatagyatva vishatyatadanataram. You cannot understand Krishna through mental conjecture. The part of the bhakti process is shravanam, to hear from Shastra and Vaishnav. Yesterday Maharaj said that Krishna instills loving sentiments within the jiva's heart through the Bhagavatam, the book Bhagavata, and through the person Bhagavata. That's how Krishna instills loving sentiments for himself within this scorched world from illusion, illusory scorching world where everyone is believing in illusions. So materialism is really a childish theory. I studied one book at the moment, and I was reading about the theory of punctuated equilibrium. So you don't have to know these things, but because I am always talking to materialistic people, then I study these things. And I was amazed that, you know, the book is written by a Christian scholar who doesn't preach any Christianity through the book, because he wants to establish foundation for theology, for theosophical worldview. He wants to establish a foundation, academic foundation for theosophical worldview. At the moment we have a materialistic Darwinian worldview. So he doesn't want to use any words that indicate religion, like God and this and that, but he uses the word design, designer, and if they attack him, you know, and they say you are trying to bring bombers back into the caveman era, you know, by preaching religion, he's saying, actually, I'm not preaching any religion. I'm simply showing the facts. And the fact that what I am saying has got a theological implications, that's okay, because that's what that's where the evidence is leading us to. And Darwinian theory also has a theological implication. It leads us opposite, that there is no God. But of course, when you examine it closely, there is no covering. It's not supported by the evidence, the Darwinian theory. So he wrote one chapter called Punk Eek, because punctuated equilibrium. That's a joke about the theory these scientists have. So they have a big problem, because the fossil record, as I indicated earlier, doesn't show any evidence of multiple intermediate forms. So what they decided, two people, Mr. Eldridge and Mr. J. de Gould, American scientists, what they decided is, what we're going to do is we will come up with a theory to circumvent the lack of fossil. So they created the punctuated equilibrium theory, which means that they coined a word. It's called allopatric speciation. So allopatric speciation means, patric means father, and allo means other father. So apparently there is this species, many, many entities of the same species, but then there is climatic change, and some migration of a river or something like that, and some of this species becomes cut out from the rest of the species. So they're very small in numbers. So they speculated that within a smaller number of species, you can, if a trait occurs, it can be fixed faster and it can lead to a new species. And yeah, so this is, so they argue, if you take a big bowl of stones, red stones and blue stones, full of stones. So if you close your eyes and you start taking randomly from the blue and the red stones, but if you try to get only the red stones, it will be very difficult to get only red stones with closed eyes. You will probably get both. So this is the idea. So if you bring it down to, if you put only four red and four blue, you have the chance to get most of the red out, for example. So that's why they devised this theory, okay, we're going to say like that, they divided themselves from the rest of the species, and then there was a period of stasis, and then there was some explosion, and they changed into this very a multicellular entity within short period, and that's why there is no fossil record. You understand? Do you understand how they present things? And then, now the scientists themselves are pressing them. Okay, what is the method then? What is the method to get from this species to that species? Which are very different in terms of, you know, the way they look and physicality and biology and so on and so forth. What is the difference? I mean, what is the method? They couldn't come up with any method. What created this quick change within the species to produce a new species within a short period of time? What is the thing? So then they couldn't give any answer, and they reverted back to neo-Darwinism, mutation in the DNA. But now there is a big problem. So what is the big problem? The mutation of the DNA takes long time. So again, back to the square one. Again, where is the fossil record? So this is going on like that. They cannot really, really clearly postulate that here is this and that and that. They create some imaginary friends for the people, and they're showing them there. If you go to some museum or something, they'll show this was first and from that came this. This is all imagination. So, and then, you know, this is the foolishness of the materialists, and then they're propagating hedonism. There is no God, so the goal of life is to enjoy the selfish gene. You know, Richard Dawkins is preaching like that, that basically whoever, you know, the selfish gene is trying to preserve itself, and therefore you have to perform better than the others to be able to win in the struggle for existence. You know, so. And then basically, but that selfish gene has also some goodness, he's saying. You can be good to others, you know, because you can't live alone, so you're good to your child or to your neighbor or something like that. He's just, he's trying to stretch the reality. That you may be selfish and at the same time good, and that really drives the species forward in evolution. It's crazy things, you know. But actually, yes, the genes, the selfish gene is not driving any evolution. Selfish gene is driving reincarnation, that's all. Yesterday I saw one devotee wrote on Facebook, R.I.P., you know, RIP, when someone dies, you know, they put this thing, R.I.P. in the rest in peace. And he translated it like this, reincarnation in progress. Amazing, huh? Reincarnation in progress. So this is our philosophy, you know. We understand that there is matter, there is spirit. We are an individual person. We are not all God. Like the Mayavadis are preaching vehemently that everything is one. They say you guys are dualistic. For example, if some Mayavadi comes, you know, they want to say, we love everyone, all the religions, we're all like brothers. But then at the end he'll say, there is no father, there is no mother. You know? We love everyone. So, okay, you may appear to be non-sectarian, but then you are sectarian towards the mother and the father. So what's the use of your non-sectarian mood if you are actually offending the mother and the father, you see? And they say, you guys are sectarian. You do not accept us. You know, we are trying to love you, you know, we are one, we are all one, but you say, no, we don't like your philosophy. This is dualism. You're still on a lower level of consciousness. You have not realized the truth that we're all one. Hmm? Fools and rascals, they'll say like that. So we, you know, we say to such people that actually, you know, actually, if you examine the Vaishnava and them, you'll see something very interesting. The Vaishnava may hate their philosophy, but he'll not hate the person. You see. But with the Mayavadis, they will try to pretend that they like our philosophy, but they will not like Krishna, Srimati Radharani. They will not like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu being God. And then, you know, if you oppose their views, they will not like you. They'll become envious, actually. But the devotees, pure devotees, are never envious. So this is one of the things that I am actually realizing. One of the symptoms of pure devotional service is that a pure devotee, the characteristic of pure devotee, he or she is not envious. And that you cannot find anywhere else. This is something visible for them to observe. Yeah, near Matsaram. Devotees are non-envious. They are well-wisher of everyone. And if you see some envy in yourself and you are practicing devotee, okay, that is because we are in a beginning stage. But the more one progresses, one becomes completely free of envy. Through impersonalism, you cannot become free of envy. Because to say there is no God in your God, that's already envy. You know, you understand? It's not possible. And that envy will be shown at some point. If someone steps on your tail, oh boy, you know that someone may have a blue eye after that. You know. So that envy is there. Within materialists, you know, impersonalists, voidists, they cannot transcend the materialistic characteristics and tendencies. The only way you can transcend is to become, to understand that you are the servant of Krishna. And sometimes other people may be harsh to us, but we still treat them with respect. Unless we are a warrior and someone is trying to kill another person, then we can respectfully kill them. This is the reality, you know. To protect the innocent person. We are not fools and rascals. This is our philosophy, you know. And this is genuine philosophy. Any person would agree with us that if you see someone attacking an innocent person, if you don't protect them, then that is not civil behavior. That is not proper. So this is Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is not about some encouragement of war for the sake of it, for profit and all that. Bhagavad Gita is all about protecting the pious. And not only for that time, but also for generations to come, to protect the pious, to show what's the standard of, you know, human life. So all these things are there. And a fool, a frog, froggish mentality, he can never understand these things because his consciousness is not refined, he's gross, he still wants to enjoy illicit affairs, he wants wine, he wants to taste flesh. You know, this is the gross level. And the more subtle level is they may be even vegetarian, but still they cannot give up the intense desire to enjoy the opposite sex. And even if they do that, even if they transcend even that desire and become, merged into samadhi, sayuja, they cannot remain there for long because you become bored. And you have to have some rasa. Some relationship has to be there. What is our argument for that? The argument is that because the source is a person, you're also a person. And If the source is an individual person and you are an individual person, you must be having a relationship. And if you're closing that relationship or cutting it down and ignoring it, then if you remain in a static state for a while, after some time you'll become materially ecstatic. You will descend down as an avatar to enjoy birth, disease, old age and death. So this is, look at the scientific logic that is within our, you know, scientific, philosophical approach and vision that Krishna consciousness gives. It makes you a better person. Not better, it makes you the best person. But even that you are the best person, you think I am the worst. Do you understand the amazing purity of Krishna consciousness? And the rascal, he thinks he's the worst of everyone, but he thinks I am the best. So, you know, unfortunately, not everyone can understand that. So Prabhupada said, one who cannot reason, he's an animal. But one devotee reminded me that, don't worry, because he may not be able to reason, but Krishna has other weapons, Harinam and Prasad. So he cannot reason, he cannot think, but Harinam Prabhu and the party is going out, Hare Krishna! And then they immediately, they don't know how, but they get involved in the Harinam. They start to dance and chant. Then they come to the urban yoga, they take some prasadam. And then after some time of taking prasadam, they click, hey, I should read one of these books. You know? So then the kirtan purifies their consciousness, the prasadam. And then one day maybe the person can understand. So these are the secret weapons of Mahaprabhu, or special weapons, I should say, for this age. And in that way we could impact on people's consciousness. So the Lord is certainly inconceivable and cannot be understood by the mind and the senses of a gross materialist, of an impersonalist, or a voidist. I didn't say anything about the voidist, but the time is just one punch. One cannot come out of zero. Yeah, one cannot come out of zero. So this world exists, it's one, it exists. So what is the visible explanation of this theory that one can come out of zero? Show me how something comes out of nothing and then I'll accept your voidist philosophy. Shri Prabhupada ki, Ananti Kori Vaishnava Vrinda ki, Gaur Premanande. Any comments or questions? Jai Krishna Prabhu, Hare Krishna, Hare Bol. Come, Krishna Prabhu, come. Thank you for coming. You'll become a great teacher of Bhagavad Dharma one day.
Very shy.
Very shy boy, yeah. Krishna was also shy, sometimes. Thank you very much, Monica. So Mahatma Prabhu, do you have some correction? Or?
Yeah, I'll tell you one story.
You want the microphone so that can be recorded?
Into the ocean, a few grains, like wheat and other things.
Just by chanting and of course. Yeah, of course. This only devotees can understand. Materialists, they'll criticize, but Prabhupada is saying here that the materialists will criticize devotees. Prabhupada was saying somewhere in the purport for having such views. Yeah, there it is. Second line. And when the devotees who are to some extent in knowledge of the Supreme Lord admit the glories of the Lord are inestimable and inconceivable, the frogish philosophers adversely criticize them. You see. So they cannot understand. His consciousness is so contaminated, you know.
If you've got time, I'll tell you another story. I had a friend from Mauritius, and he had bought a unit in Vrindavan.
Okay.
So he bought the unit, and next morning he wanted to visit the Krishna temple, Krishna Balaram temple. So he came out about 4 o'clock, and 4:15 was the Mangal Arati in Vrindavan.
Yeah.
So he got out of the house, and as soon as he got down to the street from the house, the lights went off. You know, maybe in India, the lights go quite often. So he didn't know what to do, because he didn't know the address, he didn't know the name, where the mandir was. So he was in a fix whether to go try to go to the temple, but he said, it's dark, how can I teach? And he was from Mauritius, but eventually. So he wanted to go back into the house. So some boys came, a little boy, 5-year-old. Baba, where do you want to go? So he was surprised. He said, yes, I want to go to Krishna Balaram. I'll take you. And you follow me. So he went in front and he went behind. And when he were very close to the temple, the lights came on back again. And the boy disappeared. So you can see Krishna here in the streets of Vrindavan walking and helping the devotees.
Jai. Haribo! Wonderful story.
How can you disbelieve Krishna is not there in Vrindavan? He's there everywhere.
Maharaj was saying there is no difference between Goloka and Boma Vrindavan. It's just that Krishna sometimes is manifest in Boma and sometimes he's not, but he's there all the time.
Radha Rani Vrindavan, everybody. I'll tell you another story. The Nepal time. So we were from friends, devotees, and they went to the place where Radha Rani's place, Barsana. So they went up in the hills, Barsana. The son parked the car. So it was the whole family. Father, mother, daughters, granddaughter. Now when they were coming back, the weather was very bad. It was very cold, foggy weather. And they didn't know where the car was parked. So the son was young. He said, no, I'll find out the car. So he went. He wanted to go alone. So the mother said, no, don't go alone. We all will go together and find the car, and then we'll go down to Vrindavan temple. So one dog came. It was a black dog. And he was telling the way how to go there to reach the car. And when they reached the car, the dog disappeared. So how can you disbelieve?
But certainly the dog is not God, huh? He can come by himself, but because you don't understand him, he sends someone in the form of dog. You see that?
Because normal dog will bite you.
Not necessarily.
He is telling you the way, and the moment you leave the car, he just accepts. So they are not.
It's a special dog.
Absolutely.
But we wouldn't say it was Krishna. We wouldn't say it was Krishna himself. You speak too soft.
I was thinking, scientists study, especially biologists, and so on, they say, self-esteem and
that the gene is got good character. The gene is got nice character. He's a little selfish, but he's good guy also. So, thank you. Wonderful comments. When I was in New Zealand, it's a last testimony about God. I was in the forest and I was very tired one day during the festival retreat. And I was reading Prabhupada's books on my phone and I felt tired and I thought, I'm just going to lie down in the bushes, in the grass for a while. There's no snakes in New Zealand, so it's all cool. So I thought I'll lie down. And I was thinking, you know, I wish there was an app on my phone that could read the book for me. I didn't know anything, so I didn't know that there is such apps already, but I just thought I wish there wasn't such an app. And I lied down for a while and then I got up and I said, okay, I have to go back because the program will start. So I started walking down and I was carrying the phone in my hand and I was looking, I was thinking I'm going to read and walk. So I was walking and suddenly, I don't know, I stepped on something like this, I went little skew and I pressed something on the phone and the book started to be read. And I was bewildered. Really, the phone started to read my book, you know. And I was bewildered and I said, there is God. God fulfilled my desire, you know. Krishna fulfilled my desire, you know. He want the book to be read. Okay, so really, I'm honest. I did not even think that this thing exists. I just stepped somewhere, I slipped and I pressed something by accident and it started to read the book for me. I was shocked and I was saying, there must be a God. Anyways. We've got much greater experiences than that. Prasadam, for example. Or being in Harinam or meeting a pure devotee. So, it's not that this is all that we can show the world. In fact, we cannot show a materialist anything because even if they see God, they'll say, huh, you think you God? Just watch what I'll do now and what I'll show you. The materialists, they think they better than anyone, so they'll think even they're better than Krishna. So even if Krishna appears in front of them, they won't understand. So this is very mysterious science. Manushanam sahasya shukaschit jatati. See that amongst millions and millions of people, hardly anyone inquires into the absolute truth seriously. And out of those who inquire seriously, hardly anyone knows me in truth. So someone may criticize, but why is your God so secretive? Why is he hiding himself? Why doesn't he show himself? Well, because this is the world of those who don't want to see him. So he doesn't want to interfere with them. That's all. He comes in disguise and he does his mission. Whoever saw and understood, then they'll accept. Like the Bible says, whoever has ears to hear, whoever has eyes to see, whoever doesn't have, rip. Reincarnation in progress.